give him another couple of years.
Do you think? Yeah. At least.
Maybe three.
Yeah.
I'm recording.
It's 5 minutes after 6, April 26, 2017. I'd like to call the Historic Preservation Committee meeting to order. The first order of business is a roll call. Fowler?
Here.
Looney?
Here.
Metzler?
Here.
Fredericks is excused. Gingrich?
Here.
Rupp? Here. John Horn is officially not a member anymore, so he's either excused or not excused.
Vacant.
The next order of business is to approve the minutes from our March 22nd meeting. I just picked up my mail on the way over here, so I haven't read anything because I was on vacation until last night. The mail doesn't come till 5 o'clock or later. Anybody have any observations, comments on last month's agenda or minutes?
I move to approve.
We have a motion.
I'll second.
And a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? The motion carries. Oh, you forgot number two. I always do that. Item number two, to modify and or adopt tonight's agenda. Trevor, do you have any changes to what we have? Anything from the committee that you want to introduce? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion to approve the agenda.
I'll second that motion.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion carries. Item number four, announcements. Item A, Green Bay Correctional Institution.
I'll let Brad cover item A, but first I just want to make the announcement that this is Steve's last meeting, and that's embarrassing or anything, but appreciate your service and years of dedication. I believe you're one of the original members. Is that correct?
I wasn't on the original, but I came like right after it had started. Yeah.
Okay. Appreciate your service, and we're looking for new members. So.
Yeah, you can't leave until you find a replacement.
Yeah.
This is not how that works.
That's
this is
my fine jam.
Print.
Okay, in regards to the Green Bay Correctional Center, a week ago Monday, we hosted a press release or a press conference with Representative Stephan, where he was introducing his bill for decommissioning the prison. That has since been distributed, and it is both in the budget and as a standalone bill. What's that mean for us? Well, I think, obviously, one, it's a great opportunity, but two, we're going to be working with the Wisconsin Historic Preservation Office very shortly to talk about some of the buildings that are on the National Registry and State Registry, just to see what can and cannot be done to those facilities once and if the prison is decommissioned. The time frame on it is rather aggressive. The intent is that the sale of the prison would take place by November 1 of 2018, and the prison would then be decommissioned within 5 years. So pretty aggressive time frame. Where is it going to be located? That's still all up in the air, but the bill's been introduced, and from the village standpoint, from my standpoint, I think it's a real opportunity for a wonderful addition to our community. So any questions on it? I don't have a lot of information. I don't even have the bill number yet, so.
Is there any sense of its probability of passing or, you know, succeeding? Or too early to tell?
I think it's too early to tell.
It hasn't been reviewed and discussed.
Right. The whole press conference was, we live streamed it, so it is available on our Facebook, Twitter, and I think it might be on NUI now, so it can be viewed if you have about an hour to spend.
One of the driving forces, I think, is that the estimate from a few years ago was $140 million to bring it up to code, which still doesn't make it very user-friendly. So it seems like there's motivation for a number of reasons to make the switch, but still lots of hurdles and all that. So
during the five-year decommission period, is that phased in such a way that the village might be able to take advantage of the situation before the end of 5 years, or is it all or nothing at the end of the fifth year, assuming that they do it? I don't know how that works.
The way I would understand it is the property will be up for an RFP. You know, the highest bidder will purchase the property. And if it could be the village, it could be a private developer or investor. Mm-hmm. And then what the intent is, once the sale is finalized, the clock starts ticking for the new facility to be built. And in the interim, whomever purchased the prison then is the now owner, and the state would be leasing the property from them with a chance for a little cash flow in between up until the new prison is built, and then there would be a transition over to the new facility.
Any this conversation on where the new prison would be built?
Not really, but I think the hope is that it would be within the Tri-County area. Mm-hmm. As an example, there was a prison in Virginia, Fairfax County, Virginia, that was decommissioned in about 2004-ish. Total property was around 2,600 acres, if I'm not mistaken, but the prison ground itself was 80 acres, and it was more of a barrack style versus what the Green Bay Correctional Facility is. But the development on that facility, on that 80 acres, is anticipated to be $188 million. And they're incorporating the historic buildings, not quite as old as our prison, but certainly from 1923-ish, something like that. But it's called Laurel Hill. And it's in Fairfax County. Pretty interesting project. And the Alexander Company from Madison is one of the investors. So could have been an interesting project to take a look at and see what can be done.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So that means that we might be able to tear down that ugly wall.
Dirty wall.
Just kidding. Anything else? Any other announcements? Thank you.
I have one more. And I was hoping Bobby would be present so that she could talk about this, but there's the History Treasures Tour, May 17th from 4 to 8 p.m. Fortunately, that's all the information I have, and I would have looked it up had I had more notice. Bobby emailed me a little while before the meeting and said that she wasn't able to attend. So believe it. Jim, is it part of Brown County Historic Society?
Yeah, I can
okay.
Give an update.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. all of the museums in town, history museums.
Jim, can you... So we hear you.
There we go.
Jim O'Rourke, 2339 Oakwood Avenue. I belong to a lot of the historical societies that are going to be opening their doors for the history tour. the History Treasure Tour is a free admission, open to everybody, so you can go in and get a taste of the different museums that you might not go into. Neville Museum is the lead on it. The Railroad Museum, the Oneida Museum's on there. Hazelwood, which is Brown County Historical Society, Historic Galloway Society will be giving a presentation, an open house down at the, it's called the Riviera.
Right.
Yeah, the Riviera, down by the old Holgrave Brewery on Riverside Drive. And then White Pillars will be open, and Heritage Hill will be open. So there's a lot of places open. Not enough time to go to all of them, but it's open for 4 hours. And you just kind of pick to see what you're interested in.
And what day is that?
It's going to be May 17th from 4 o'clock until 8 o'clock. But I believe that the best one is going to be the Historic Galloway Society. They'll be talking about old Galloway, and I think they'll have refreshments.
Trevor, do you have is there anything that you could send us as a reminder?
I'll find something.
Whatever they have published about this event, you know, some like a flyer or something that you could, so we can put it on our calendars.
Sure.
Great, thanks. Any other announcements? Hearing none, we'll go on to item number 5, public appearances.
Kimmel Rock, 2339 Oakwood Avenue, as part of our history tour, treasure tour that we're going to be having. We're going to be celebrating the 200-year anniversary of Old Alloway. Old Alloway was first established by our first postmaster, who would be by the name of a gentleman by the name of Robert Irwin. He's an ancestor of Senator Coles. He's a ancestor of the family that owned the Murphy Coles estate. So what I've given you today is a map overlay from the first official survey of Brown County that identified the first farm lots from this, that we took over from the British after the War of 1812, and included in there the first person to subdivide his land was Mr. Ducharme, that would be on farm lot number 17, which is centered on Alloway Avenue, down by the Mariner Hotel. And so that shanty town represents where what I consider to be the start of the middle class in Wisconsin and in the western United States. Mr. Irwin came and he lived in a shanty. He brought his family over. They built the first middle class house. It was actually a log cabin, but they made it look like a white clapboard house because we didn't know how to build frame houses yet, so we only know how to build log cabins, but they made it look like a clapboard house. And so that would be in the shanty town, those would be the first two houses at the furthest south. So that was the first post office in Wisconsin, and that would be the Irwin's house. Next to him would have been Dickinson's house. He married an Irwin, and they went and started a city called De Pere. And next to him was Dan Whitney's house, and he foreclosed on some property down at the mouth of the river, and he started a city called Green Bay. So all the three cities on the east side were started right there in Shantytown, and everybody was here from 1817 to 1828. So the first 10 years, that's where everything was happening. So this is one of the maps that we'll be using at the history tour. Thanks.
Thanks, Jim. Anyone else wishing to speak at the public appearance? Hearing none, we'll move on to item number 6, discussion, local designations and local designation criteria. And the one that we're going to talk about for sure here is the Murphy Coles Estate fence. Trevor, do you have something to say to start us off? I know you sent us some criteria.
Sure.
Which everybody but me has read.
As you said, I provided criteria that, or standards for designating local structures as is provided in our historic preservation ordinance. So that's there for your reference, but then to talk a little bit about the fence, I invited our public works director, Craig Byrne. He's been involved with some of the discussions along with the DOT, so he really knows what's going on there. I don't have a lot of insight. So.
It's off. Yeah. Well, that's the new one, isn't it? Well, a difference from real quick our normal meetings. I'll give you some background on what has been going on with the Murphy Coles fence and where it's going in the future. As you're aware, Riverside Drive is a project with the Wisconsin Department of Transportation that is in the design process now for upgrade of that highway, reconstruction. Part of the, first of all, on the DOT project, they go into a lot of detail in the project. Wetland surveys, they look at historical properties, areas adjacent to wetlands that require preservation, the cemeteries, things of that sort are critical issues that they look at. There's a very extensive process that the DOT goes through in a project. And the reason they do those things is because these are always fairly large projects, and you have a lot of potential impacts on a project. And to avoid those kinds of issues, they go through a step-by-step process to make sure that everything is addressed properly, and so that when they actually get to construction of the project, they don't have a problem with an easement or historical property or any number of things that could happen. So all those things get addressed in advance. And it typically takes about 2 years to go through the planning process on a project. And then they allocate another year or 2 years for property acquisition so that they have the property that they need in case they have to expand right away. So we have been involved in this project with the DOT for over 2 years now. And the process is now at the point that it is moving forward into the design phase. Over the course of the past couple years, obviously this Murphy Coles fence was one of the things that received a lot of attention. In that area, the east side of Riverside Drive will have a sidewalk that will span the entire length of Riverside Drive from Depere to Green Bay. In this area of the fence, that's in an area that's very narrow in terms of what's available for property. You've got homes on the west side that are close to the right-of-way, close to the curb, and you've got the fence and trees and things on the east side that are also, you know, very close to the curb. And there will be a sidewalk in this area. What we decided in evaluating the sidewalk, and the DOT has done a very good job of evaluating all of these various issues in a lot of detail. Their consultant is Mead and Hunt, engineering firm, and worked very closely with the village and have received a lot of input from the village and village residents through the workshops and all those kinds of things. In this particular area, the approach that was decided upon is the 5-foot sidewalk and a 3-foot colored terrace, not a green lawn terrace, but a concrete terrace that will be kind of a mid-tan color. And the reason for that is the residents adjacent to that area did not want to have to mow in that area because of that being close to the highway and the fence being on the other side. So one of the discussion points in that process was to provide something that was very maintenance-free for the residents. So that concept actually, the residents had a lot of, those property owners on that fence line
really this was their decision in terms of how they wanted to see that look from the standpoint of their maintenance and requirements of the terrace. In the evaluation of that fence, there were a number of things that were looked at. One is that actually that fence, a portion of it is already in the existing right-of-way, so it's not in the correct location, a portion of that fence. The fence, a significant part of it is not in very good condition. The ironwork is rusted, and there's some bad spots on it where it's either sagging or it's rusted through. The columns, a number of those are not in very good condition. To accommodate the sidewalk and the terrace, and to minimize the extent of the right-of-way acquisition, what was decided upon was to move the fence 2 feet. Moving it 2 feet to the east would allow for the road construction, the sidewalk, and the terrace. And what the DOT did was had a number of meetings with the residents. I've got to think there was at least 5 or 6 meetings with the residents. Several of them, Village President Rafter attended, I attended some of them as well. Between the two of us, one of us was always at one of the meetings. The meetings were held in the homeowners' homes. And part of the reason for so many meetings is we couldn't get all 5 or 6 at the same time. Sometimes we get 4 and one would be missing. So we kind of scheduled it so that we could cover everybody, but we didn't always have all of them at the same time. The property owners had a lot of input to the decisions that were made. The game plan going forward and what was agreed upon by all of the property owners is we're going to use a commercial fence to replace the wrought iron, but it very closely matches what's there. But it will be an aluminum powder-coated fence that really will have very little future maintenance. It's going to be almost exactly the same design of the current fence. If you didn't go out and actually compare the two together, you would not be able to tell the difference between the two fences. And then the columns will be, they'll be replicated. They found a stone or a brick that will match the existing brick almost identically. So the game plan is to move the fence 2 feet in, replicate the columns, replace all of the wrought iron with an aluminum, and extend it around the corner on the south end so that it matches in with the fence that goes east-west. And the two large cottonwood trees, those will be removed because the fence goes through those trees, and those trees are too close to the right-of-way. We can't construct around those. And the property owners support that because they've actually been interested in trying to take those trees down, but the cost has been so great that they've shied away from it. The other trees, the ones that the residents are interested in preserving, the oak trees and so forth, those will all remain. So I think we've arrived at a very good compromise with the property owners where the fence is going to be replaced, but it will look nearly identical to what's there. We're minimizing the maintenance on the sidewalk and the terrace for the residents because of the design. They've all had input to it. In fact, they've gone out and looked at fences so that they could see what it looked like on installed fences similar to this. I think there's one at Lambeau Field, which is the exact same fence. So there's been a lot that's gone into it. It's been over a year of meetings with them, but we have arrived at the point where there's an agreement, a consensus among all the parties that this is what will be done. The next step, which will be, I'm going to say, I don't remember what the exact date is, but it's probably this fall. The agreements will be presented to those property owners so that we have a written agreement between each property owner and the Department of Transportation for the property acquisition and, of course, the reconstruction of the fence. So that's kind of where we're at. As it relates to the historical issues, back when they first started this project,
the DOT interfaced with the State Historical Society. The society had looked at the fence, but they did not recommend that that be considered a historical, whatever the correct term is, historical monument, whatever it is. They said it's of cultural significance to the community, but it isn't integral to historical properties, and they didn't feel that it met the criteria to be classified as a historical structure. So that was early in the process, and when the DOT does a project, they go through all of the historical properties and deal with each one individually as part of the process of highway design. So that's kind of where we're at. It's been a very extensive process. From our standpoint, I'm comfortable with where we're at with respect to those property owners and what will be done and how this will work out for them. And I'm sure if you ask President Rafter, he would say the same thing. He's been very pleased with how well the DOT has worked with these individuals to make sure that we arrived at a point that everybody was comfortable with and acceptable. So, I don't know if that addresses kind of the questions you had. Certainly we can try to answer any questions you have, or if there's other information you might be looking for.
Any questions?
No, really, I'm satisfied.
It seems to, I mean, the options obviously were tear it down and make it go away, or to repair it as is, which would be expensive and probably wouldn't last as long, or this one, and there may be other options, but certainly seems like a good solution, and if everybody's on board with it, that's pretty good.
Yeah, the one of the early items that they talked about was actually reconstructing it as an iron fence exactly the same, and the cost was very, very high to do that. And that cost, and then there was a couple of standard replica fences that were very close. So the residents looked at these all, and they concurred that it wasn't worth a cost that was 5 to 10 times higher because of this little bitty couple of little ornamental things. And they supported the idea and actually picked the fence that would be used. So, you know, I think that worked out well. And it's a good marriage of replacing it, but keeping the cost reasonable. But it is an expensive proposition. I mean, you don't normally find the DOT going in and replacing something like this. This was one of the things that we as the village, before the public was even involved, when this project was initiated, we gave the DOT some criteria on things that we wanted to see. This was one of the things that we wanted addressed. We knew that it was going to be an issue, but we wanted it replaced with something that looked, you know, the same. And so the DOT, from the beginning, that was one of their objectives, to make sure that they addressed that issue. So from the standpoint of what we wanted to accomplish as a village, we're very pleased that we got what we wanted out of the project.
And this would be in the DOT part of the budget, not the village section.
Exactly. It's paid for by the DOT.
Yeah. Win-win.
And there are parts of that fence that are pretty much non-existent, right? I mean, the part that's inside the two...
Trees. Yeah. Right.
I'm sure isn't there or salvageable.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, if you
couldn't make it look exactly
closely,
like...
You'll see it's in pretty bad shape.
Yeah. Yeah, and there are parts missing. Did you have a comment that you wanted to come up and talk to us about?
Jim O'Rourke, 2339 Oakwood Avenue. I was very active in the very early stages of preserving the fence. I went to war with Tracy on whether this should be designated locally. I did put in a request, in fact, a pretty strong demand that raised some hair on the back of some people's necks. I did demand a Section 106 study of the fence. The head of the State Historic Preservation Office sent me an email that said, definitely, we'll do your study, but it will not be designated historic. And sure enough, the Section 106 study came back, and they called it a remnant. That's more than just a remnant. That's about a quarter mile long of fence, so it's very significant. And I then went to the DOT and had a meeting with about 14 people in there, and this was one of the strongest ones that I advocated. So those minutes from those meetings are all that the DOT, this committee should have, the Section 106 study on the fence. But it's very important. This just goes to show how important the certified local government status is, because I explained to them that as a certified local government, this committee had the right to designate that as historic, with every protection that the state or the federal government could do. And they looked at that, and they didn't want to go down that road. So they did the Section 106 study. The Section 106 study said the state didn't want to protect it, but this committee had the power to go ahead and protect it, and so they said that they'll go ahead and just work with the residents as if it weren't protected, and that's why they're spending the extra money. So they did protect it, and the Section 106 study is available through the DOT. Thanks.
Thank you. Any other comments? We're discussing this under a heading of local designations and local designation criteria. It would seem to me that if it's going to be a new fence, that we can't locally designate it. Is that true? Do we, you know, or is there no sense in, is it a non-issue for us to be discussing whether or not to identify that as a locally, as, you know, locally, because it's going to be a new fence?
Well, the argument that I made to them is that it wasn't just the fence, that it was the entire Murphy Coles estate. This is what's left of the Murphy Coles estate. You have the May building, you have the 12-car garage with the turntable on it and the tunnel going to the house. You had the caretaker's house, which is a very good building too. So it was the cultural center. It was pretty much the start of Old Alloway. And once Murphy bought four lots to start suburbanization after World War I. He had a ton of money, and they came through and they set the tone for Old Alloway. And everybody else started building much nicer houses in Alloway than were originally built between 1900 and the start of World War I. So when Green and Vroman mapped out the city of Alloway in the 1890s, because they were going to build an industrial center where the prison is now, when they mapped it out, they had designed houses just as indoor plumbing and electricity was coming on board. By the time the 20s came around and Murphy Coles got involved, they knew electricity was going to be big. They had the electric trolley running down the road, and they knew that indoor plumbing was going to be big. And so they set the tone for that Alloway was going to become the upscale center for the Green Bay market, just like the North Shore of Chicago. It was based upon the North Shore of Chicago. So the Murphy Coles estate, while the gate is only a structure, it was part of a larger site, which included the house and the caretaker's gardens and everything else that went along with it. And that's the picture of the building right there. So if you had questions, I think that it's the while it's still there, you can designate the structure as historic, if you wanted to. You may not need to do it anymore because they're going to go ahead and replace it with something that's acceptable to them anyway. But the goal was to make sure that those people didn't lose their backyards, because I'm a property rights advocate too. So by designating it historic, that gave them additional rights, and the state had the right to go ahead and take it down if they wanted to, but they had to give them extreme, I believe it's called indifference, to bend over backwards do everything they possibly can. And so they ended up doing that and moving it 2 feet. If the people are on board with it, I think it's a great solution. Yeah. But it's you do have the right to designate it historic if those neighbors wanted that protection. So I would suggest that you kind of leave it up to the neighbors, because they're the ones who have the vested interest in it. Thanks.
Thank you. Yeah, as Trustee Gingrich said, it's kind of a win-win. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't appear that there's any need for us to do anything, because the result mm-hmm. is about as good as it could be, and whatever leverage we may have been able to apply by having done this 2 or 3 years ago, it's been done anyway. So we'd be redundant. So,
and we could suggest or recommend putting some kind of a plaque there once the new fence is in place, to kind of give some reference to the historical significance and that it's replica or whatever. But it'd be kind of neat to point that out, you know.
That's a good suggestion. How do we capture that so that it in our minutes, or do we need, is that an actionable agenda item for our next meeting to go ahead and request that that be done and to be involved in the wording?
It's not an action item tonight, but it...
I mean, for the next time.
It could be a future item.
You can designate it a historic site without... You have sites and structures?
Yeah, yeah.
So you can designate it a historic site.
Just there are sites where things used to be.
Yep.
You drive downtown and then you see it.
You just got to pay for the plaque.
Yeah. So that could be an agenda item for our next meeting to discuss and agree on how that would look and... What do you think?
He'll come up with a recommendation.
Yeah.
Nothing more than that, but a recommendation to consider.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't have to.
A suggestion to the DOT.
We don't have to get the wording right.
Yeah.
But get the message, get the meaning of what the plaque should
be. Get it in the DOT budget.
I think we can.
We can swing that?
Yeah. Okay. You can swing, a few $100. Whatever. Okay, good. Any other discussions on this topic? Hearing none, we'll move on to item number 7, Historic Preservation Month and Activities. Trevor, do you have anything to start us off on that discussion? May is Historic Preservation Month.
Sure. I've mentioned and discussed at the last meeting and then earlier tonight that event taking place on May 17th certainly sounds like something worth attending. But then in the past, we've always had this historic proclamation as well. And forgive me, I didn't list this as an action item on the agenda, so I guess you can agree with the proclamation, and if you have any suggested edits, I can make them, but and then I'll bring this to the village board if that's a consensus of the committee.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. This has happened in the past couple of years. I mean, we've done this in the past few years.
Mm-hmm. No reason. I think the wording's pretty much the same.
Yeah.
Great.
It's changed.
No reason to change the wording. Mm-hmm. Other than put current date on it.
Right.
So do we all agree?
Yeah.
Nobody wants to start over. Okay, great. Anything else that we should discuss relative to Historic Preservation Month and the activities? It's kind of neat that we have this history treasure tour that we can learn a lot.
I suppose it was an accident. It was not an accident to put it in May.
Yeah.
That would be good. Is that a Thursday?
There's a lot of fun people out there. Yeah, and they're just volunteers.
Cool.
A lot of fun.
Anything else on that item? If not, we'll move on to item number 8. Update on Alloway Waterworks building located at 535 Green Avenue.
So you guys are now familiar with the building, having been inside it. And we are still trying to sell it. We have a few submitted offers. However, we received notice from the state recently that we have to put a restrictive covenant. That's the correct term. Restrictive covenant on the property when we go to sell it. So this would be different than a private sale of a building down in the National Register. Because we're a government agency, we have to have this restrictive covenant stating that nothing will be done to the building in perpetuity that would jeopardize the status of the building being on the national and state registers. What that means is what could be done to the building is limited, and limited to what extent, we don't know yet. We have a meeting set up with the state next month to find that out, what can in fact be done with the building. Can the berms be pulled back? Can drywall be hung? We don't know. We're operating on the assumption the whole time that this would be like another private-to-private sale, and that someone could utilize those tax credits as long as they didn't hurt the face of the building. However, we're under the impression, based off the last correspondence we had with the state, that might not be the case. So we're trying to figure it out, and I guess we'll have more information next month.
So the new level of restrictions or restrictive covenants is a little more all-inclusive than just preserving the facade,
right.
The structure and the brickwork on the facade's interior. Like you said, being able to remove the berm. I mean, if you can't do some of those things, you can't use it. Or it might not be.
It really throws our wrench into the, I mean, potentially a major wrench into reusing it.
Right. And so we have to have this covenant in place when we go to sell.
Okay.
We haven't put it in place yet because we don't know exactly what it means. So that's the hold up, and we're hoping to figure that out next month.
That was ever easy. Anything else on that? Anything that? Yes, sir.
Hello. My name's Eric Berteau. I'm a Green Bay resident. I've been a St. Matt's Church parish member since 99. I did a lot of preliminary work on this building to get estimates done, to get the roof repaired and the garage door repaired, and the Spanish tiles restored and some painting done. I have an offer out for the building as is. I can take it with whatever historical preservation or historical covenants are in place as is right now. I can bring a check for what my offer was to the village board meeting next week. As a matter of fact, I want to start. I already have an existing artisan weed removal and garden bed restoration business, and I have clientele in the area. Right now, I'm trying to commute. I use a tricycle. I had a near death. I almost got killed at work in 2013 while working with a tree crew. So I can no longer drive a car or climb ladders. I'm disabled. So I'm trying to start my own business. I use a tricycle. Actually, I have started my own business. I ride a tricycle everywhere. I have all my tools and bins on that. I don't use any gasoline. I don't use any chemicals. I use all elbow grease and hand tools. I've got a pretty faithful client base that I've been doing work for years. I'm also a certified graphics and multimedia specialist. I'm also a certified piano tuner technician. I can start a lot of these businesses on my own, working for myself on my body's time clock, because I can no longer work for anybody else. I will get fired repeatedly because of my brain seizures and my migraine activity. But I can work for myself, and that is my attempt. I have long-term plans that I think that would be really very good for the community, that include part of my mission with my church, and I can take this building now as is. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other comments?
I'm watching the building kind of fall apart right now. The Spanish tiles need to be repaired. The paint is falling off. The wood is going into disrepair. There's a huge hole in the roof over the garage. I've already got estimates done to fix that. The first thing I would do immediately would be to give this building a facelift because it's a beautiful structure. Have the Spanish tiles restored and have the building painted, a fence put around it so it would no longer be a teenage drinking spot, and have that somebody patch a hole for the drainage on the roof. That's how the leak, that's how the roof could collapse. But those things would be done right away.
Thank you. Any other comments on this item?
So when did you say you're meeting with the state? What is it, next month?
Yes. Yeah. We actually set it up 6 weeks ahead of time. That's the earliest we could have something in place. So, and again, that Eric, I understand. Well, you guys all saw the hole in the roof, and it's coming down. So something needs to be done as soon as possible. But again, I think the village wants to be responsible in who they sell, or not who they sell to, but when they sell it, the person that buys it can make this a functional building. Because there's those concrete pads in there, I don't even know if those can be removed. Eric mentioned a fence. The way the state worded their email, it doesn't even sound like that might be an option. Again, we don't know this because we haven't had the discussion yet with the state, and we just want to make sure we're clear with what can and cannot be done so that we don't jeopardize any standing we have with the state. There are fines associated with this building if we do not meet certain criteria, too. So I wish it was better news, but
no, it sounds like you don't have any choice, and whatever sale you finally end up with, you want to know that it's within the legal.
You want to make sure that property, the person that's buying it, isn't surprised either by, hey, I can't do what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
So
you want it to work.
Yeah.
Thank you. Any other comments on this item? If not, we'll move on to item number 9, next meeting date and agenda items.
I know in the past we generally had an event or something similar for Historic Preservation Month. I don't know if in lieu of a meeting, as long as there's no business plan, if everyone just wants to make an attempt to go to the Historic Treasures event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think
that's up to me.
We had a couple items that were suggested for future agenda items, but it doesn't have to be in May.
And that's on a Wednesday, isn't it? May 17th?
Yeah. It'll be a week before when we're supposed to meet.
It'll be
a week before. So we're already programmed to do something on Wednesday.
Change the address.
Just an earlier Wednesday.
Yeah, 4 o'clock.
Yeah, from 4 to, from 4 to 8 p.m. And, I think that would be...
And that would support the...
Yeah, for sure.
And if you'd like to have any things put into our presentation with the Historical Society, you know, if you have anything you want to dump, just let us know. You know, Rita and Holly, you know how to get over to Rita and Holly.
Jim, does the Historic Society do they start immediately at 4? Will it be like ongoing presentations?
Yeah. No, well, last year we had people in period outfits talking. We had maps and we had histories and that type of thing. Games and historic games and that type of thing. But we usually have people in period costumes representing people who lived here a long time ago.
So Trevor, you could send us something that identifies where to go and the different locations, because we may not all have that information.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have a flyer, and we'll make sure that Trevor gets it.
Okay, great. Yeah, that's all I was visualizing, was a flyer that tells us where to
go. And that'll be great.
Yeah. Great. So I guess we're saying that in lieu of a meeting, we're going to attend this event. Mm-hmm. And a future meeting might be to share some feedback that we might have from the event, because we may not all get to all, in that time frame, we may not be able to go to every item, every station. So this is something for the next month, is maybe some review of this activity, and then
we'll want to follow up on the Green Avenue building.
Yep.
And the other meeting that we have with Historic Preservation in regards to the prison.
Yes.
So that alone could be a rather lengthy, hopefully very detailed.
Yeah, by then. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so that would be the meeting in June then. Okay. Any other comments on the meeting date and agenda? If not, we're ready for item number 10, adjournment. I'll entertain a motion.
I'll move to adopt.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussions? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? We're adjourned. Thank you. Steve, good luck.
Yeah.
What are you going to do with all your free Wednesdays?
But you can still go to the events on the 17th.
Yes, I can. Still go to the events, and you're always welcome to come.
If Trevor sends me the stuff yet.
Yeah.
Did you get it again today?
No, I'm saying for
May 17th.
I forgot to